This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This is part two of this week's episode.
And we're back for part two of your emails recorded in the same night.
We are still drinking alcohol.
Woo woo. Okay, the next one comes from Madison. Love the podcast and hearing your thoughts and takes on my favorite SJM books. Also, first time caller here. I'm listening to your latest podcast, episode 8, part 1, A House of Earth and Blood. Pause on this email. The amount of times people come in, or like whenever people respond, they're like, on episode like 8, part 1 or part 2. I don't know why it makes me like so touched that they included the part in it. I don't know. I just love it. It's like, that was a choice that we made. We didn't know people would like it. And no one said that they do, but
no one's complained about it.
Knock on wood, choy.
Yeah,
but they respect the parts. Can you tell I've had some drinks and I started my period? That I'm like, it's just so sweet they said part one. It's just they care that they called the episode by its name. I have a few different takes on Bryce's leg pain. The first one is that she doesn't mention the pain she endures is because then people like Hunt and her mom would urge her to get it fixed. But this is a reminder and a remnant of the night that Danica and the Pack of Devils died. It's like a living reminder that if she got rid of, she runs a chance of forgetting that night and her friends. The pain also serves as a punishment for Bryce. It's the thing she has to live with in penance for not being there for the night of her friends. It's like a physical survivor's guilt she carries. If she gets rid of it, she's not serving her penance. The last thing, and this is a bit of a wild card, is that if she mentions it, she runs the risk of becoming more of a burden and annoyance, with the added bonus of being seen as weak. All these thoughts stem from a leg injury that I received when I was 9. The injury has given me chronic pain and very noticeable scarring. When I was younger and the pain was worse, my friends and classmates would often grow annoyed when I mentioned my pain. It's also still traumatic when people point out the scarring on my leg. I could have a cosmetic surgery that would take the scar away, but I've chosen not to for a few reasons. Hunt was a real ass for his take on Bryce having the scars, in my opinion. The process itself sounds awful, and I run the risk of forgetting that I have the leg injury, which could cause me some intense pain if my leg is hit at a certain point. The scars give me a physical reminder to know my limits and accept that I have a different reality to other people. Just some takeaways that I thought I would send because I have a unique insight. The injury also really endeared me to Bryce because it's so rare to see a character like her living with something so close to what I live with. Thanks.
I love this feedback. While some of it is explored by SJM, what I find fascinating is this thought that Bryce doesn't want to be a burden to folks because she definitely saw herself as a burden to her friends. She views herself as lesser than her friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Before Danica's death and during the partying days. So it makes sense that with this injury, she's even more clammed up about it. Because,
even more human.
Yeah, because now she's even weaker than she was before.
Yeah.
So, of course, she doesn't want to talk about it. Totally makes sense. The other thought I had, and this goes back to wanting to not forget the night that Danica died. I remembered when we discussed Bryce's drop and she sees Danica for the first time. She thinks to herself she'd forgotten the details of Danica's face.
Yeah.
And how much is her injury compensating for the fact that she is forgetting her friend? That she can't remember every detail about her friend's face.
Yeah.
And she's punishing herself because she's human and will forget things.
Yep.
So that just made me sad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you so much, Madison, for sharing about yourself and your own personal experience and journey. Very much appreciate it. And like, I love the insight from just a unique perspective that I wouldn't have. And it is, you know, people's pain is such a journey. And you and I were just talking about this.
Yeah.
And your own experience with some things you went through. And it is very much like you don't know what people's recovery is like.
Yeah. And no recovery is linear.
Yeah. It's so different. Like people have such different experiences and such different psychological experiences too. Like healing, quote unquote, healing, physically healing doesn't necessarily mean that it's it.
Right.
And what is physically healed too?
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, oh, therefore, like, this is completely better. You're fine. It's like, well, no, I mean, you can still be suffering from many other ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's take my... So I had ankle surgery in 2023, which is what Jack and I were talking about. Or I guess it was 2022. Damn.
At the very end of 2022. It was basically 2023.
It was basically 2023. And yeah, I mean, the physical recovery was extremely hard. It caused mental harm to me and was a difficult thing to recover from. I still have phantom pains in my foot, even though don't... You know, it's healed. The scars still aren't healed.
Yeah.
I still have stiffness. Like, more than a year later, it's still healing.
Yeah.
Both physically and mentally. And I don't talk about it.
Yeah. It is interesting when she talks about, when Madison talked about, like, Hunt being an ass about Bryce's scars. I do think that we didn't go into that.
Yeah.
As much as we should have of, like, what scars could mean to a person.
Yeah.
And also, like, don't fucking comment.
Yeah. It's not for you to comment.
It's not for you to comment. And also, like, I don't know how to say this or what my thought really is on this necessarily, but, like, you know, scars are a journey. Scars are an experience.
Yeah.
Scars are people's story. We don't get to comment on people's stories.
Yep.
And oftentimes people's stories are beautiful. And they are hard, they're painful, and there is recovery involved. And there's a lot of other things. And it's up to a person to decide whether they want to share that with us.
Yeah.
But it's never something to anyone shame anyone with.
Yeah. I split my head open when I was 2.
Did you?
I did.
Where?
I have a scar between my eyes.
Oh.
It's very faint now because I got this, I cut it open when I was 2, right? Yeah, so it's had a lot of time to heal. I loved the scar between my eyes. I thought it was so unique.
Yeah, yeah.
For the majority of my childhood. And I remember being in high school and someone commenting on how it was such a shame that I had a scar.
Oh.
And to flip the narrative on me.
Uh-huh.
When I'm in high school.
That's a very formative time.
Yeah. It was, it's very interesting. I don't think about it now much because it's very faded. But
it's like, talk about such an innocent way of looking at it, of being like, wow, this is something that makes me unique and special. Mm-hmm. And some asshole taking that away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, even if you don't hate it now, it still doesn't have that, like, that spot, the spas, the spas. Special.
Yeah. So unless you're going to be telling someone their scar is sexy.
Yeah.
Even then, don't risk it.
Yeah.
just leave your comment to yourself.
Right. When I was 18, so it was before I met you, I had breast reduction surgery, which you know about, and they took 5 pounds of boobs.
I wish they kept it and given it to me, man.
And I still have big boobs. And anyway, so there's two different types of scarring you can do. There's one that's like a lollipop, which just goes around the nipple and straight down. And then there's a little bit more, when you have like a lot more boob to go through, it's an anchor. So imagine it goes around the nipple, it goes down, and then it goes like an anchor all under your boob from your, like, kind of like your torso all to the side. And you can see my scars because I got the anchor, especially like on cloudy, like tank tops and stuff. Like there's like the side boob that comes up. They're super faded now, but they're there. Like there's definitely still there. No guys cared. No. There was nothing to say about it other than like, you know, no one, that was something that I always was worried that I would feel self-conscious of. It's just incredible how no one cared.
As someone who loves boobs.
Yeah.
Are your boobs still squishy? Yes. That's all I need.
Right? Not mine, obviously. But
obviously. I don't go around squishing your boobs.
No. Have you? No, I'm like, you don't slap on me. I'm like, don't. They're tender right now.
Yeah, I don't slap them.
No.
I am very respectful of your boobs.
Yeah, we don't slap each other's boobs. Your butt, though.
Oh, my God.
I slapped Amy's butt at Disneyland. That is like, and it's just me slapping your butt.
Yeah. I never slap your butt.
No.
Wait until retribution.
You'll never do it.
Oh, I sure as hell will now.
It's just funny because I get you at like the most random moments and I go for like a good slap, a good ringing, echoing sound. So I'll like get like a running charge, like a running start. Yeah.
You'll like, start from like 12 feet away.
I do start pretty far back. Yeah. At Disneyland, I was in another room charging at you. And then I saw a little tiny kid right by her. And I was like, I like deviated. And like Amy didn't know I was around and she was sipping mimosa. So you almost spit it on the child.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that would have been a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. The next email is, I think I pronounce it Cessia. If I pronounced it wrong, I am so sorry. Remember when we got, we were talking about bar mitzvahs? So this is in reply to that. Hi, just listen to this week's episode. Bar mitzvahs are always at 13. Bat mitzvahs can be at 12 or 13, depending on the synagogue, but aren't tied. Oh, I guess bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs different?
Yeah, I thought they were tied to gender. She's saying that they're not tied to gender.
Well, no, I just wasn't sure if this was a typo. I didn't know there was bar and bat.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, they are two different things.
All right, well, I'm going to continue. Okay. I'm going to leave that in because there might be someone else who was like me. Bat mitzvahs can be at 12 or 13, depending on the synagogue, but aren't tied to getting a period. They're just more modern invention since the first one only happened about 100 years ago. Yay, patriarchy. So the age isn't as fixed. Also, you talk about angel numbers a lot. You may want to look at Gematria, which is Jewish numerology, given that SJM is Jewish.
Oh. I didn't know they had numerology.
Time for you to re-record the entire season.
Oh my gosh. Maybe I'll just do a special episode on numerology and going through all the numbers in Crescent City. I'm so glad that Cessia, again, if we said your name wrong, I am so sorry. I don't know how to say it. And
we can be better, and I apologize.
Yeah, we can be better.
We could also not have had so much alcohol.
Also that. Also, I'm so glad you provided clarity around bar and bat mitzvahs, because I knew the two existed. I didn't understand the difference.
Yeah.
So that was very helpful. I am very ignorant, and so I really appreciate anyone who's willing to tell me these things.
Yeah. Information's welcomed. Thank you.
Yeah, and sometimes I just don't know where to look, and sometimes Wikipedia is not enough.
Oh my god, Wikipedia is so not enough. The next one is from Mariah. Allow me to dump some of the thoughts I've had over listening to a House of Earth and Blood episode so far. Oh, so this is episode 3, part 1. About the pizza joke Bryce makes to Hunt and Isaiah, it made me think of the corny pizza delivery man trope in porn, and Bryce is referencing that as a way to weaponize her sexuality against them. Oh, that's when they're like, knock on the door, and she's like, didn't order pizza.
Oh, yeah, that's I love that point.
That's really good. That's
such a great point.
Yeah.
Because Bryce would.
Bryce would. Also, weaponizing the sexualized stereotype of half fey, half humans before they can use it against her, which is partially why I think she does it in general. It also makes more sense to me why Hunt would react the way he does by barking a laugh.
Because they both watch porn. That's my takeaway.
The other week, Nicole ordered pizza, and that delivery guy was hot. He was a hot delivery guy.
You wanted to make your own video?
No, I was in PJs and no makeup and hair is up.
You are still worthy of a video.
Thank you. It would not be a glamorous video, but boy, I'd put my effort into it. In episode 3, part 2, I think Bryce's impression of Micah going from sex to rot is because she saw Hunt's tattoo and remembered what it meant, and that disgusted her. That's why Hunt's halo seemed to darken, in my opinion, because it was a stark reminder of what a fucked up power structure they have in their world and who benefits Micah and who doesn't, Bryce and Hunt. Hold up. The halo.
Yes.
Would darken.
Yeah.
Whenever he was upset. Which I felt like we knew that, right?
Right.
But.
Was he upset because Bryce was obviously turned on by Micah?
Yes. Or is he, like, what now I'm thinking, because we know he's a prince of hell. Mm-hmm. He's the son of a prince of hell. Mm-hmm. So is it like his hell daddy's kind of being like, you can break out of this? Like, is it, when it darkens, is it almost like, because it darkens when he's upset. Yeah. Whether that's Bryce being hit on or flirting, like whenever he's upset, it does darken. I wonder if there was any kind of hint of like the halo was always something that he could have broken out of.
Oh, yeah. And he chose to be.
Well, he didn't know.
No, he didn't know. But in some ways, he didn't try either.
Wow. How do you like that, Hunt? Having some responsibility put on you for once. But, I mean, you're right. But I do wonder, because I always read it as like, this is like an indication of his, you know, where he is emotionally. And I was cool with that. But now I'm wondering, like, what about the demon daddies? The prince daddies? Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's some kind of connection there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to continue with that. When Micah and Hunt are discussing the case on the roof of the gallery, and Micah says, quote, we need to use every weapon. I think this is a reference to them using the horn. Whether Micah meant it in that moment, I don't know. Oh, that's interesting. Saying that during the drop, quote, you face the very depths of your soul. This reminds me a lot of the Ouroboros. Oh, when the Vanir face the depths of their soul during the drop, but the Fae and Prithian cannot face their own true selves in the Ouroboros? That's an interesting thought.
No, that is a really, really interesting thought. Let me think about this. So the Vanir go through the drop in order to access their immortality. And anybody who does not successfully complete the ascent dies.
Yeah.
So it's like they couldn't face what was at the bottom of their soul.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that in some ways equivalent to an immortal fae who never had to experience the drop, looking into the Ouroboros and not being able to turn away? But the legend around the Ouroboros makes it sound like only two people have ever succeeded or whatever the case is.
I mean, when you think about it, I think it's like power to my power, because the fae in Midgard are nowhere near as powerful as the fae in Prithian.
That's fair.
So I wonder if it's kind of like they're dampened down version. Do you ever wonder what you'd see at the bottom of your soul, like when you're reading it? Were you like, what would I like, what would be there?
It's a deep question.
Because I
have not thought about it.
Oh, I thought about it. And mine looks like Voldemort before he becomes powerful again. And he's like a little shriveled up
baby. He's Benjamin Button.
And he like, I just imagine it looking up at me being like, you're insecure. And I'd be like, ah, I know this already.
Stop it.
Yeah. I feel like the drop only works for confident people. And not people who have anxiety, because I feel like you put someone who has a lot of anxiety and mm-hmm. other mental mm-hmm. health issues. And mm-hmm. it's like, you ready to face with the bottom of your soul? And it's like, you mean it's a Thursday and I have therapy today? Yeah, let's go. Yeah, fuck fair. You, bro. I have nothing to.
I feel like I experienced the drop this week. I'm sorry. This is a major tangent.
Yeah, yeah.
In my dream, I was using the bathroom and people from my old job and people from my new job were outside talking about me and they were shit talking me.
Oh.
And they're people who have always supported me. And so I leave the bathroom and I confront them and I'm like, why couldn't you say this to my face? I could have gotten better if you had told me. And they're like, they wouldn't respond. And then I was like, you know what? You're responsible for my badness because you kept hyping me up. So if you'd been honest, I would have been better. So you know what? It's your fault I'm bad.
Wow.
So that was my drop.
Displace the blame. I love it. You know what? We all have to go through it. We all have to go through our dream drop. Continuing with Mariah. In episode 4, part 1, I was comparing Rune to Eris. Both chose different ways to seem non-threatening to their horrible, fire-wielding fathers who both tortured their heirs. Rune chose to become non-threatening to his father by not playing the game, by rebelling, but in such small ways that it's not undermining the Autumn King. Eris very much plays the game to appear to Baron as his faithful son, while in reality, he's hiding what a threat he truly is. And ultimately, Rune ended up being the biggest threat to the Autumn King by killing him.
I love this comparison because I think the one thing, and this is all guesswork, another thing that I think Eris and Rune have in common, Rune loves his sister.
Yeah.
I think Eris truly cares for Lucien, but because he's playing the game too hard, he can't show it.
I feel like we have definitive proof on that.
Yeah, I mean, yes. But we don't know if it's because of Eris's love for his own mother or actual true love for Lucien.
Yeah.
But I could see them being the protective older brothers.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like the comparison where Eris knows how to play the game in Rune. Didn't I mean Rune is such an emo boy where it's like I'm rebelling and shaving part of my hair and growing out the other part of it long
and getting colorful tattoos.
Daddy, you'll never love me. There's one person who's listening that feels very targeted right now, and I am sorry for that. It's like, look, it's a great fashion choice. I love it.
Oh, it's so sexy.
But it's also like Rune is the most unaware individual.
Yeah.
Like, defending his father, but still being like, I hate you. I love you.
Fuck you, Dad.
Fuck you, Father. Still, Mariah's got one more thing here. In episode 6, part 2, Hunt going from the Arkesian amulet to the library on his train of thought is SJM dropping breadcrumbs for when Micah reveals that the priestesses of the Library of Parthos wore them. Because the library under the gallery is what is remaining of the Library of Parthos. So Bryce essentially became a priestess of the library that Jessica hired her for. I also think that this is a breadcrumb for the reveal for who slash what Jessica is revealed to be in Crescent City 3. Also, can't forget the library in the House of Wind connection to the Library of Parthos, with it being watched over the priestesses.
I do like the priestess-library connection. I didn't make the connection between the House of Wind and the Library of Parthos.
Yeah, I did not make that connection in the slightest. It's like, oh yeah, shit.
You're right. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the idea of like Bryce
being a priestess.
Having become a priestess.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the Arkesian amulet works on her because she was a priestess.
Do we think there's gonna be any more traveling in the next ACOTAR?
No.
Wow.
Because Rhys is so against it.
It's like you don't even want us to be happy. But you're right. Well, I don't know. She just said it. Yeah, you know, you're right. But you're right. if she comes back with another Throne of Glass. Now, people are debating on what the before I say this, there is no confirmation that she's doing Throne of Glass.
Right.
This is all pure speculation. We know she's doing ACOTAR, and she just talked about another series that's like very emotional. And people are guessing that it's going to be Throne of Glass related. And people are guessing that it is some part of The Crossing. I think that it's going to be Throne of Glass world. I think we are going to get a little bit more Aelin's side of things. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know if we're going to go completely, because she says it's how emotional it is. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine Aelin not being involved.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go back to traveling, I think it would be in that world.
Fair. I agree. I could see her doing a whole other series that's set during the time of the Crossing.
Okay, well, let's do some math real fast. That is not going to be enjoyable for either of us.
Okay.
Crescent City happened 15,000 years after the Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
We can at least determine minimum Crescent City is set 15,000 years after Throne of Glass.
Right.
Aelin travels through her little time jump or her like little jump thing,
mm-hmm.
sees Rhys and Pharah.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to the future.
Probably.
I don't like it.
Because when she falls through, she's falling through time and space.
Fuck, you're right. It makes me sad thinking that they're that far past.
However,
uh-huh.
with the horn.
Time and space.
Time and space. Because it says, I think, in the first Crescent City book that the universes are separated by time and space. They're severed. So I was surprised that Prithian and Crescent City were on the same timeline.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, they are because of the 15,000 years, because it's mentioned. I was surprised. I genuinely thought they were going to be on different timelines, or that time was going to pass differently.
Yeah, me too.
So who knows? SGM can do whatever the fuck she wants because the horn is...
I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean for cutting you off.
No, it's okay.
I will say, I don't know if the horn can cut through time, but we do know something that does cut through time that we have yet to really come back to. The harp.
True, true, true.
And the only thing that we saw her mess with time was to stop time to give up her power.
Right.
I feel like you don't come up with that big of a weapon to then tell us in the next series mm-hmm. that Throne of Glass happened 15,000 years prior mm-hmm. to not bring that back.
Who knows? We had a lot of theories about Flame and Shadow before it came out.
She just hurts me.
Yeah. I think the one amendment I would make to your claim is I don't think Aelin would have made the Crossing. I think it would be at a minimum.
No, I agree. I think it'd be after her.
Right. It would be her children or her grandchildren or 100 years after her. I don't think it would have been.
I agree.
During Aelin's
That's what
lifetime.
I'm saying. At a minimum, she's 15,000 years later. But it's also enough to know that her father is still a legend. King Brennan.
Yeah.
And so I think that it would have to be.
It wasn't her father. It was her ancestor.
Oh, her ancestor. You're right. Well, okay. Hold on. We're changing things now. For a second, I did think it was her father, King Brennan, was Aelin's father.
He's not.
It's been a minute since I've read it. So that doesn't necessarily mean that Crescent City is 15,000 years after. The Crossing could have happened before Aelin.
But Lydia is wearing Aelin's ring.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. We're back. And we're back. Could have been two rings. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there could be multiples. I don't know. But Lydia wears the heirloom of her family, and she gives it to her sons.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Just tell us. Just tell us. And if you're not going to, write at a speedier fashion.
She does have children.
Let the nannies take care of it now.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't agree
Inflict
with
trauma on your children, for my sake.
Literally don't agree with anything I said. So please don't take. I know you don't. But if there is one person out there, Sarah, if you're listening, I don't mean it.
I've had alcohol. I can't be trusted.
I'm sobered. I have no excuse. The next one comes from Olga. In one of your episodes, when you were talking about the Viper Queen, you mentioned that she could be associated with Medusa from Greek mythology. However, I notice a parallel to ancient Mesopotamian mythology. I love when people bust out Mesopotamian.
Yeah. Like,
you're immediately superior than me.
100%.
Like, I think I'm smart, like, talking about Greek mythology. Here you come in being like, bitch, hold my beer.
I remember nothing.
I can barely say the word. I'm self-conscious saying it now. Okay, so back to it. I notice a parallel to ancient Mesopotamian mythology, which might be interesting to explore. So there's a Sumerian god, Ninazu, the lord of the underworld. His symbol is a snake. Now, I want to bring your focus to Ninazu. Sorry, these are big words for me.
Do you want me to look at it?
Yeah, you know what? You just take over from here. There you go.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, you go.
Oh, damn. Ereshkigal, that's my guess, another goddess of the underworld in Sumerian mythology. Ninazu, or Ninazu, is often described as her son or husband in myths, so they're connected. Essentially, Ereshkigal is a gatekeeper. She doesn't let the dead go from the underworld, and she doesn't let people in the underworld. She represented the end, a place from which you could never come back, and she was one of the most feared and respected deities. Now, the Viper Queen is pretty much similar in her description. Obviously, her symbol is a snake, but she is also a ruler of the meat market, a very dark and underworldly place, and she is a guardian there. The meat market is untouchable in terms of not one of the governors could do anything with it. And those who come there don't always leave. Another interesting parallel is that her only visual depiction, she is surrounded by owls, a recurring theme in SJM universe, and is standing on a mountain. In Mesopotamian mythology, the underworld was located underneath a mountain.
Mm.
So maybe a possible connection to the prison in Prithian is there. She's also surrounded by two lions, but I couldn't find a connection there.
Tamlin.
Well, lions in Asian mythology, specifically Chinese, are protectors. That's why they have little lions at the gates of a palace or a front door. I love this connection. I had obviously know nothing about Mesopotamian mythology.
I want to do like a nice good Wikipedia deep dive so I can bust this out.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that SJM would do.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I love that the rest of Lunafian is... Well, actually, now I wonder if the other gods... Solus, Luna, Erd.
Mesopotamian inspired.
Yeah, Chthona.
Yeah.
I know that there are Greek mythology similarities, but Mesopotamia came first.
Yeah.
Could Mesopotamian gods have parallels to those gods?
Probably.
I need to go
those gods being Lunathian gods.
Lunathian gods. I have to go look this up now. Thank you for bringing this to our awareness, Olga.
That was great.
Again, I love learning things from our listeners.
God, they're so smart.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just want to be like, here's the book. Let me know.
You record the podcast.
You send me your emails and then we're going to record it.
You give me your notes.
And then I'll say thank you.
Yeah.
Whatever's easier. This next one comes from Kate. So after listening to your wonderful podcast every morning, I love how you guys deep dive names and meanings. So I looked up Ecteon, Lydia's son. Oh, Lydia's son. Okay. The other.
Oh, not Brennan.
Not. I mean, truly, though, the way you said it. Oh, not that one. Right. That's funny.
The one that has attitude.
That's hilarious. And found out, in short, Ecteon in Greek mythology is a story about a man who basically pissed off Artemis and she turned him into a stag and he was hunted by his own hound/wolves. Quote, he fell to the fatal wrath of Artemis. Later, his myth was attached to her Roman counterpart Diana, but the surviving details of his transgression vary. The only certainty in what Ecteon suffered, his pathos, and what Artemis did. The hunter became the hunted, he was transformed into a stag, and his raging hounds struck with a wolf's frenzy. Lysa tore him apart as they would a stag. There's more, but it was too long. I thought it was cool when I found out because that's basically what happened to Lydia. She comes from a line of stag shifters and shifted into her hind form and essentially was chased to her death by her own dreadwolves.
SJM is so freaking smart.
She strikes again.
Also, did you notice, what was the name? Lysa? Like Lysandra?
Yeah.
Who is friends with Aelin, who is the descendant of Brennan, who is a stag.
I want to punch this microphone because of how happy I am.
Oh, SJM. How do you contain all this information in your head? I know she does a ton of research, I'm sure.
That's why she takes so long.
But, like, she makes so many brilliant connections.
It's just so smart.
It's just she constantly knows how to come back to it without it being obvious.
Yeah. And like, talk about, I will always go back to what a happy hermit said one time to us, where it's like, it can be as deep as you want it to be.
Yeah.
And like, that's another one.
Yeah.
This is why I don't trust anything she gives me, in the sense that like, it means something.
Yeah, it does.
I love it. When I say I don't like it, I mean I love it.
Yeah.
This one comes from Antonia, but not my cousin.
How do you know?
I'll know.
Okay. I'm sure she would have called herself Tony.
Yeah, she would have called herself Tony. I'm like, now I'm like looking at it, like, wait a minute. I can also see the handle and it's not Tony's handle.
Okay.
Hi. I'm just listening to part one of episode 6 of the new season. I'm so glad you flagged the, quote, weighs heavier than she looks, because I can totally relate, and Hunt's reaction might be why I love him so much. I have a really strong memory of being weighed aged 11 at school, and the teacher being shocked at my weight because I never looked it, and made me feel so self-conscious about it. Now, only 18 years later, do I see how unimportant it was. And I felt so seen both by SJM put that there and when you guys raised it. Thank you.
Aw, I love that.
I love it when women on TikTok share their weight. The amount of women that are over like 200 pounds. And I'm just like,
but goddess. You don't look it.
Yeah. And I'm like, and like, what does weight look like anymore? You know, doesn't. Yeah, I understand that entirely. Like, I think you and I talked about it on that episode of being like, we never look.
No one
looks the way that
everyone's
they weigh.
Shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's when I'm like, the number on the scale is subjective. Not in terms of like actual mass, but in terms of what it should or should not look like.
Exactly. This is making me be like, yes, gym tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Right. Because like, I mean, the only numbers that I want to care about is what I can like weightlift.
Yeah.
Or exactly. Bench press. You know what I mean? Like. And they don't have to be high. Like, I just care about like that they're there. Right. And then I can do anything like that. And it's fine. Those are the only numbers that I will be considerate of.
Yeah, I agree.
And the next one comes from Sharin. Hi to my favorite bookish podcast.
Hi.
I just re-listened to A House of Earth and Blood, and I'm enjoying your analysis so far. I definitely enjoyed Crescent City 1 more on my second re-listen and strongly feel the series goes downhill from there. But the following also relates to House of Flame and Shadow, so please only keep reading if you have finished it. By the way, I hope you have for the sake of the breadcrumbs. As I was re-listening to Crescent City, I got this surge of frustration about the utter assassination of all Crescent City's potential. And when I start catching up on to the pod, I had the following hope. If you read House of Flame and Shadow, please, please, please address the breadcrumbs and hints SJM drops, which leads absolutely nowhere. What about the Autumn King and all the hints that there was more to him and that he is a complex character only to turn him into a cartoon villain by the third book? What about Adis and Jessica discussing Hunt's father and Adis saying to her she, quote, knew the male best, yet her history with Apollyon, one of Hunt's sires in some weird way, is not personal at all and does not seem deep whatsoever? There is so much hinting at Hunt's father that the final reveal is disappointing and falls flat. To say, quote, his father would be proud of him, insinuates that there is one father, not three sires, none of which have any emotional connection to him. Mm-hmm. These are just two of many breadcrumbs which lead absolutely nowhere. I would love it if you address them in the breadcrumb section Usually SJM foreshadows and groundwork is so amazing. That House of Flame and Shadow absolutely did my head in with its sidelining of well-established characters in favor for nonsensical plot points. Also, did we ever learn what Fury does? In Crescent City 1, she seemed to be this important, mysterious hotshot. In House of Flame and Shadow, she shows up for 2 pages to babysit on an island. Anyway, looking forward to the rest of the pod. Can't wait to hear the new perspectives you share on A House of Earth and Blood. Talk about a perfect one to end on.
Yeah. So this makes me think of something that our friend Kate Golden said at her book launch party yesterday.
You mean our author friend, Kate Golden?
Our author friend.
Our other friend with the best-selling book. Yeah, Kate Golden. Yeah.
And that's not me name dropping.
Oh, that is me name dropping. You did it. I did.
But she was talking about her first published book and how she wrote a prophecy into it. And by the second and third book, she was like, shit.
Yeah.
It's already out there.
Yep.
I wish I hadn't done that.
Yep.
And I wonder if SJM has some of that in Crescent City, where she thought it was going to go a certain way or look a certain way, or thought she could make it fit, and then had to be like, you know what? I'm really hoping everybody forgot about it because I can't make it work.
To me, A House of Sky and Breath is going to be what makes or breaks the third book.
When we do the analysis?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right now, I think there's a big jump that happens from Crescent City 1 and what we just finished with Crescent City 3. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to get to Crescent City 3, but Crescent City 2 is going to have to do a lot of legwork to make 3 work.
Yeah.
And I would like to hope that she did. There's, you know, all the issues that you brought up in your email, I have too. We've talked about them. Mm-hmm. There's like, you know, Autumn King truther right here. And it's hard because I do want to have so much faith in her that she did bust it out. There are parts that make me feel like, was it lazy? Was like, did she not think it through? Mm-hmm. Was she not allowed? Did her editor say, please, you can't make this a 1400 page book?
Yeah.
Which she should just have been like, I can do whatever the hell I want. I'm SJM.
Or just do a fourth book.
I know. And be like, surprise, it's 2.
Yeah.
You have to wait another 6 months. I'm like, damn you. But yeah, I think that she was probably compressed in that third book. Mm-hmm. I would like to hope she hit the parts that she felt like she needed to hit.
Yeah.
And the reason why it felt disjointed is because maybe, well, I think because we also, you've said it before in another podcast in one of our other episodes, that like there was just too long of a period between 1 and 2 or between 2 and 3. We had too much time to have our own theories and stuff.
Yeah. And I also think, so I'm thinking specifically about the epilogue where Edis tells Jessica, well, you knew him best. What if he was saying that tongue in cheek?
Yeah.
What if he was saying that because Jessica actually hates his guts and is obsessed with him because she hates his guts? I mean, the way he says it, it makes it sound like Edis doesn't have a relationship with Apollyon, when in fact he does. Like, I understand the confusion because I feel it too.
Yes.
But I'm going to choose to have grace for SJM because if this is the only time she's failed me, oh well.
But has she? That's the question.
Yeah.
Has she? Because I don't know if she has. Now that we know what CC3 is, I think Sky and Breath is the one that's going to really make it for us.
Yeah.
I don't know. The other day I had this thought that her second books are the best. Think of Mist and Fury.
Yeah.
I mean, Crescent City 1 I like, but I just really love Sky and Breath. I like ACOTAR a lot, but I really love Mist and Fury. Mm-hmm. I like Throne of Glass, but I love all the other books too. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I almost feel like she's good at setting up a book, but she really delivers in the second book.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a real thought or if that was a thought I had. Like, I mean, it's a real thought. I don't know if it's going to be like accurate.
Yeah.
But I think it will.
I think we need to analyze Sky and Breath and Flame and Shadow. And I don't think we're going to know how we feel about it until the end of that.
Well, great news. We're going to.
Yeah. Do both. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a while until we're done.
Yeah.
But come back, circle back around in a year. We'll see how we feel.
Yeah, but like, don't circle back. Just keep listening.
Yeah, right. Because
like, don't leave us.
We should just try to remember to circle back to this conversation.
You and I circle back.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll not be lazy and to actually do it. Circle back.
I think it will be impossible to not
come back and listen.
Well, and come back and have this conversation of did Flame and Shadow?
Yeah.
Fall flat.
I mean, that's going to be all of season three is yeah. like really going, because I think it's the way that all SJM books, when it comes out, everyone's so critical of it.
Yeah.
I do not remember a book that's come out that people have not said this was bullshit. How dare you?
Except maybe Sky and Breath, because the cliffhanger was so big.
Because even then, though, people were mad about Therian point of view.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
The cliffhanger overshadowed everything, but a lot of people were still annoyed about Therian's yeah. point of view and yeah. other stuff. So, yeah. or and people were annoyed about Danica's betrayal all over again and it mm-hmm. being just the same thing as book one.
Yeah.
There was still a lot of complaints with book two.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I
have faith.
I have faith. Until then, we're going to come back in July.
Late July.
We're going to cover A House of Sky and Breath starting in late July. Very excited about it. In the meantime, we are going into our summer book club,
which we start next week.
And we discuss, can you believe it?
From Blood and Ash.
I know you've been asking.
By Jennifer Armentrout.
You guys have been asking.
Since we started this podcast.
Literally day one. So yeah,
from the first live,
we will be discussing one book a week. We're still going to have episodes released every Tuesday and Thursday. If you would like to be a part of the discussion, make sure you follow us on Instagram because we gather thoughts there and then we record them.
Yeah.
And we're not going to tell you when we're going to put those out because our schedules change.
Yeah. So just keep an eye out on the Instagram stories.
Yep. Yep.
And answer any questions you happen to see us post.
I'm excited. We have 9 books, some newbies, some classics. Classics being like Cruel Prince.
Right.
Yeah.
From Blood and Ash.
From Blood and Ash. If you want to know more, please follow us on Instagram. We have it posted there.
And our handle is Book Talk for Book Talk. You can also find us on TikTok.
And I guess we're wrapping, aren't we? Please make sure to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platforms. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo at the handle Book Talk for Book Talk. We also just released new merch.
Oh, yeah. We have a fantastic, if I don't mind saying so myself, t-shirt for Book Club. You should check it out because it involves books and sexy chickens.
It does. And it is fantastic. Amy designed it.
She did.
I'm wearing it right now. I just love the two chickens.
The two chickens
it's
are great.
Two sexy chickens hanging out by a campfire with books.
Yep. Yep. What more can you ask for?
It says specifically summer 2024 book club.
So the Romanticy edition.
It is a limited time. You will only be able to purchase it during
this summer
during the season. So that was a choice I just made right now. But that feels right, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Right. So you can just go buy a shirt, please.
We don't really make money off of it. You're paying for the cost of the shirt.
Oh, yeah. Full transparency. We're not making
pennies.
You
are helping us market the show by wearing the shirt.
Yeah, it's like $25 and it's free shipping.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not here. We're not here to make money.
Never.
Yet. Never.
No. Choy. Never.
Yet.
Mind. Sorry. One day.
I promise we'll make money off of you guys later. But we'll tell you when we do.
Yeah. All right.
Love you.
That was a disaster. Goodbye.
Is that your new voicemail? Yeah. Hi. That was a disaster. Bye. Wait, should we do the whole thing? Bye.
So. We should post a picture of ourselves in our t-shirts.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
That's like, there's no world I'm posing for anything at this moment.
Oh, yeah, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I don't want to look at myself right now.
I understand.
When I was a young boy, my father
took me into the city
to see a marching band. Yeah. We can't do anymore because we'll get copyright issues. I'm sure.